Welcome, everybody, to the Ripple Intent Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle Makrowski, and with me, as always, is John Grant. John, go ahead and say hi.
Hi, everybody. Kyle, thanks for bringing today's energy.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think I'm going to attribute that to our guest. She's definitely raised the bar this morning for our energy, and I appreciate that. What do we do here in a Ripple Intent podcast? We talk about what we do with Ripple Intent. Ripple Intent's a nonprofit organization that is working to make people, better teammates, and better leaders. And so we do that through different events, our breakfast clubs and our annual symposium. And we also do that through our podcast, which is what we're doing here today. And as always, we have an awesome guest, somebody that I had the pleasure of meeting, oh gosh, going back to, I want to say 2012, 2011, somewhere around there. And we've stayed in touch ever since. And the work that she does, the work that she did was inspirational when she came and spoke to our group. We were talking about that. We'll talk about that. She has her own consulting business. She's based in Texas. She has basically changed the PMI groups throughout the country for the better. She is an umpire in the Little League World Series this year, which is fantastic. Has been on ESPN. The most famous person John and I know, I just want to introduce Tracy Duez. Tracy, please say hello.
Hey, Kyle. Wow, what an introduction there. Yes. Thank you.
I can keep going, but I'm like, you know, I need to breathe. So I'm going to let you talk for a moment. I mean, what you've done is pretty amazing, and it just goes on and on and on. So thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. This is pretty fun. Now that you know where the record button.
Hopefully it will be fun. That does help. So yes, I did not have the record button on my screen when I went to start our recording this morning. So luckily I was able to figure out where that was and, you know, technically challenged, but yeah, we made it work.
Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. So geez, where do we want to start? How about we start with what are you doing these days? What are you doing now?
Wow. That's a big question. I'm one of those people, I can't just do one thing. So I'm on this podcast today, for one thing. And then, I just got into construction partnering, which I didn't even know what it was about 3 or 4 months ago. I do workshops. I'm going to Vegas to do a PMI training here in the beginning of December. So, yeah. And I do a lot of consulting and help people think better. That's
Ooh.
About it.
Ooh. Help people. Yeah, there you go. See you John light up on that one.
Cause I need some help thinking better. Tell us more. What does that look like? What does that feel like?
Well, what it looks like is very few people know that you can actually measure your own thinking. Like there is assessment, you know, personality and behavioral type stuff out there, but that's above your thinking. I have this process framework, I guess I'll call it, called the TEAR model, which is T-E-A-R. And it's right behind me, but I will tell you about what it is. It's like a triangle since, you know, it's a podcast and not video, even though I can see you guys. So we all want results, and that's like at the top of the triangle. That's exactly what we want, right? And then we all know the way to get there is to take actions. And so a lot of processes, procedures, best practices, they're all focused on the actions people take. And yet we all have been in a situation, maybe just this morning, where we think, oh, I should do this. But then we don't do it. Or, you know, oh, I should be nice to this person or I should go say hi. And we're like, no. And why don't we do it? Why do we say no? What's the next words that come out of our mouth? I don't feel like it. Most of the things that we don't want to do, we don't do because we don't feel like doing it. I think I boiled that down to like the very bottom there in terms of me and why I don't act in ways that we know that we could or should to get to the results or outcomes we want. And so I realized, okay, if emotion is getting in my way, that's kind of right under action. It's like energy in motion. And so, well, what causes me to feel a certain way? It has to do with what I'm thinking about at the time. because we can change our thinking and now we can be excited about something. Or we can change our thinking and we can be sad about it. It's all the perspective that we take. So TARE is thoughts, emotion, action to results.
Most it sounds simple, but it also sounds academic. You got an example?
Yeah, we have lots of examples. We're going to use some of yours. What?
Awesome.
What are some of the outcomes that you're looking to achieve? It could be anywhere, work, home, it doesn't matter. Thanksgiving, who knows what's coming up. You have a result or an idea?
You, come on.
Oh, okay, it's me.
We peeled me apart. Like, we did my innards on like two podcasts ago, so we're going to take you and just tear you down.
I have to actually go through and map out my own, I say my own, I have to map out the family schedule for the night for 2024.
Oh.
Yes. So each year around this time, we actually got to sit down, get the calendars, figure out who's going where, who's doing what. What does the summer look like? When are the kids off school? All that stuff, just to try to have something visual 1 year at a time. And it is tedious. It's not one of those things that I will get fired up for, but we need to do it. And I usually start and then we go through it together and then but that first initial sit down and let's make it all happen. That's a big deal. That's a lot of work and it's boring.
There you go. I love everything you just said because like the actions that you want to take to get to the result, what's the end result of that? You have your whole year planned out. I mean, why would you sit there and do all of that?
We don't, it's not so much that it's planned out. It gives us, so like vacation times, it allows us to go, hey, look, here's some times where the kids are off of school. Maybe we can work a vacation in here, or maybe we can work a family visit in here. And so, but it also helps with, you know, we got basketball, we got soccer, we got robotics competitions, we got cross country. So it helps, even though we don't know all the schedules, at least we know and we can see visually that those things may be happening. So it prevents a whole bunch of accidents and it also prevents us from missing a lot of stuff. So we found we actually, I don't say do more, but it's a lot less stressful and it allows us to be like, hey, look, we got a free weekend in the month. Do you want to do something? We can be, it sounds weird, but we can plan to be a bit more. It gives us an opportunity to be more spontaneous. The outcomes are awesome.
I just want you to notice the difference between when you talked about the results and when you talked about the action. I mean, John's just grinning right there. I see him, right? You are like, oh, I have to do it. It's tedious. It's boring or whatever. And so all I did was change your thoughts. I just said, by asking a question, best way to change your perspective is to say, hey, what do the results look like? And your energy totally changed around doing that. So when you sit down to do it, what are you thinking about? Are you thinking, oh, this is boring, tedious crap? Or are you thinking, oh, imagine what this is going to be like. We're going to have these schedules. We're not going to miss anything. We're going to be able to be spontaneous. Look at how much fun this is going to be.
No, so Tracy, which not the heard, second part. All I heard from him initially was, I am boring. Yes. That's what I heard. Kyle is boring. And then, you're right. You changed it. And he got a little less boring. Because I was like, oh, yeah, I bet their kids are doing a lot. Oh, well, where's that vacation going to be? All right. Well, now what's up?
Mm-hmm. So that's the whole tear. It can be a tear too. I mean, tear is spelled the same way. You could be crying if you keep your thoughts the same as they were. Like, I have to, I should, I must. And there's no such thing. You don't have to do anything. Everything you do in life, you do because either you want to, you get to, or you choose to. That's it. You don't have to pay your taxes. You don't have to pick your kids up from school. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You get to do those things. Or at least you choose to, because you don't like consequences.
We had this long conversation this weekend about gratitude with a group of people. And we were talking about how you're supposed to be thankful for everything all the time. And some people were like, are you kidding me? I really have to be thankful for that guy in the left-hand turn lane who doesn't turn left on the yellow and then we have to sit through a whole nother light cycle while we sit there and they're not even paying attention. And it's like, I'm supposed to be thankful for that. And it was like, yes, is the easy answer. But the reality is, no, you're not thankful for that. You got to be thankful that you're in that moment. And that's the piece of it. You know, it's funny. I wrote down the results, excited, the actions to get there, they suck. And I don't know if that was really your point, but that was my mentality, because it's like the tedious work. And then I was thinking, as you were describing it, that it's like training for a race or exercising for the end result. It is hard. I wouldn't say that. I would change my word from suck to it's difficult and it's work and you got to put it in there. But you're doing it because you keep reminding yourselves of what the result is going to be. You know, and talking about that, so my kid, my oldest kid, he's a junior. He just finished cross country about a month ago, not even. And his last meet, he was really excited. He was going to go for a personal record, and he had a time frame in mind, a target in mind, and he missed it. And he was pretty upset with himself afterwards. I mean, he was really upset and like beating himself up, kind of upset. And, you know, there's a lot of people there trying to condole him and hey, you did good and you had a great season and you did this and you did that and all that stuff. And he was still very frustrated. And so I pulled him aside and I grabbed him. I said, "Hey, feels like crap, doesn't it?" "Yeah. You're pretty mad and angry, aren't you?" "Yeah." "Remember this feeling." And I'm telling you that, remember this feeling, because in a month when I say, "Hey, get off your butt and go run," you're going to go, "Meh, meh, meh, meh." And I'm going to remind you, remember what this felt like? So yeah, now I can go tell them, "Hey, I talked to this person. And if you remember this tear model," reframe it. Because that's all you're talking about doing is reframing it. I'd say all that. I'm not minimizing this by any means. This is hard. This takes practice.
What's about shifting perspectives? And what are you choosing to focus on? Are you choosing to focus on the suck? Which is okay if you feel competitive that day and we just want to get through it. You know, like when I had COVID, I'm like, shoot, I don't care. I'm just still doing the stuff I want to do. I don't care how tired I feel. It's a competition to me whenever I'm sick. I'm just like, you're not going to win. Whatever that little bug is.
You're talking about the cold, not yourself. Okay.
Yeah,
I got you now.
Yeah. The cold, the bug. Okay. Whatever it is, it win. And so it's just about shifting your perspective from what are you going to focus on? I mean, okay, if you go back to the guy in the left turn lane who didn't go through the yellow light, what are you going to focus on? Are you just going to still be mad at something you have zero control over? Or are you going to take back the agency you have over your life and, I don't know, find a better song on the radio or something, whatever it happens to be that you can do in that 2 minutes now that it's going to take you before the light changes again. You decide every minute what you're going to do with your day. And that's really what changed my life. So people always wonder, why do I even talk about neuroaxiology? It's just a blend of neuroscience, how your brain works, and axiology, which is a value-based science based in math that teaches you how your brain works.
Well, now you've really, really got my attention. You start talking about math.
Yeah, there you
go. My engineer just kicked in.
Yeah.
So is that where you're pulling in? There's a measurable component? Because you mentioned that at the outset, right? There's a way to actually kind of go through and measure this. And I feel like a little bit in terms of the agency component, this is where, you know, when you start getting really down on yourself, and I think we're all our own worst critics, that's really like the kick in the pants. You're like, this is ridiculous. I don't feel like doing this anymore. I'm just exhausted. I don't have the energy for it. So I kind of get pulled out of that positive mindset, and sometimes it's hard to get back in. But like, everyone loves for things to be measurable and actionable, right? So how do you then kind of take that and make it measurable?
It was formal axiology was kind of founded or pulled together by a guy by the name of Dr. Robert Hartman. And he had a PhD in math. He had a PhD in philosophy. He had his JD. Like, he was just a genius, I guess. I don't know. But he was born in Germany in the early 1900s, and he wanted to organize good the way he saw Hitler organize evil. So axiology is all based on that. And he did it using math. transfinite calculus and set theory, if you really want to know, which is kind of fun, kind of nerdy for you, John. And that piece of it, there is an objective hierarchy of value. And we all know it, like, in our hearts intuitively, but we find it hard to understand and talk about it. And he allows us to do that. So let me give you a quick overview. There are three dimensions of value, and you work in them all the time. So the lowest, mathematically the lowest, dimension of value is systemic. This has to do with the ideas and systems and processes and best practices that we put into place, right? And we're all about processes, especially in the PMI and engineering, all that kind of stuff. Now, the process, the idea, the expectation is important, but it's not as important as what you do with it. So you have an idea for an iPhone, and then that's worth something. Then you actually create the iPhone. That's worth a lot more, right? So we go from systemic to what's called extrinsic, measurable or tangible, extrinsic, tangible things. Now, most of our lives, we are spent thinking that those are the two dimensions of value. Have a good idea, have a rule, have a process, follow it, don't follow, whatever. And so we're measuring, we're flipping back and forth between that. The infinitely valuable piece of all of that is the human experience, the intrinsic piece. So let's go back to the iPhone. Had an idea, you added, generated more value by creating the iPhone, the actual tangible thing. That isn't the most value of it. The most value you can get out of it is the human experience of it, which is why people will pay over $1,000 for something that if you took the pieces apart, it might be worth 10. Because what you can do with it, how you can experience it. And so that's the intrinsic piece of it. So the intrinsic is always infinitely more valuable than the extrinsic. And the extrinsic is more valuable than just the idea or the plan. Right?
Interesting. I buy into that, though. I mean, for me, like, even like to the point of you're still talking material things, right? So like, I'm not a big gift person. I'm not a big receiver, but I do love an experience. So if the experience is connected to a physical object, that's cool. But the experience is the important thing. So yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah. Well, look at the whatever car it is that you drive. You could get one way cheaper that does get you from point A to point B. That might not be what you're driving.
That's true.
I mean,
I'm like, well, I don't know. Now, I mean, my car, I really actually like the car I've got for the first time in my life. So, no. But you're right. The experience I have as a result of the thing, which does happen to get me point A to point B.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's got some bells and whistles that then, you know, does some other things besides point A and B.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, I have a Tesla and it does the same thing, right? It's not a flip phone. Yeah. I could have bought a used Accord or something like that, which I did have an Accord for like 14 years. But no, I wanted a Tesla, not to save a tree, which is, I guess that's nice, but it goes really fast. Yes. It's just, you just press the accelerator and wow. Like it's the experience that I bought. It's the experience that I paid for and the bells and whistles. Whatever that is, right? And so it's the same thing with whatever it is that you're doing. Your employer, whoever that happens to be, whether you're a consultant, contractor, or you're a full-time employee, they pay for all of that. Your thinking systemically, they pay for what you can do extrinsically. And they also pay for how you show up and the experience of you. You have probably worked with some people who were just brilliant, but they were just a pain in the ass to deal with. And so they might not be on the team anymore, or you might not be on the team anymore. And so those are the kind of things that we miss. And axiology provides us a way not only to frame value, but also to measure the way that we think. So we put a list of 18, the two lists of 18 things together. And we ask you to rank them. They're really weird things. Kyle, do you remember taking that assessment back in the day? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things like a good meal, a technical improvement, a baby, as well as things like blowing up an airliner in flight, burning a hair ticket, the stake, torturing someone. Like, there's just weird things, 18 very weird things on this list. But they all have a mathematical equivalent based on axiology. And so what we do is we ask you to rank them, and then we compare your ranking, your personal hierarchy of value, to the mathematical one. And where they match up, that's where your, we call them cognitive assets, but that's where your best thinking is. Where they don't match up, that's where you're going to get frustrated when things don't go the way that you want them to go, because you're overvaluing your expectation most of the time. And there's just different ways that we can then show you on a piece of paper your best ways of thinking, and then those ways of thinking that you might want to avoid when you need to make a good choice.
We're going to get tangible for a second on this, because what as you're describing this, what I keep going to in my mind is the systemic and the extrinsic piece. You say that you're engaged regardless where you work in all three, but where my mind is going is there's definitely a heavier emphasis on two of the three. The experience is more of an accidental, like, yay, you're a good person, or hey, look at that, you're people like working with you. That's kind of a bonus. But you're hired for what you know and what you can produce. And so it's almost like the human piece, which you're saying is most important, is the one is actually least valued in the working world.
And Dr. Hartman did some studies on this, and he talked about how when people are valued as a human doing, they'll do their work. But when they're valued as a human being, they'll give you about 40% more of their cooperation, productivity, and buy-in, which does increase the extrinsic and the systemic that they're giving you, but we don't focus on it, and so we don't see that. He did some studies where he went into factories back in the early 50s, and he encouraged the owners of these factories to give the workers a 15-minute break in the morning and a 15-minute break in the afternoon instead of just their lunch break. And the little bean counters did all the number crunching. And in this one factory in Baltimore, they were going to lose 100,000 man hours. And they said, there's no way we can do that. I don't know how he talked them into doing it, but you know, we take breaks now. And they do in manufacturing. And so they did. And they got a 40% increase in productivity and also a 40% increase in profits by giving people a break. It doesn't make sense extrinsically or even mathematically, systemically, but it does when we take into consideration the human factor. Now think about the leaders that you want to follow. Do you want to follow them because they're brilliant? You want to follow them because of how they show up, that intrinsic piece.
For sure.
Now look what you guys thinking. Look at that.
Yeah, right.
Right. You can see the processing across our foreheads as we take this in. But no, it's the resistance. I mean, there's studies that show, and people do know, that once you get like that 46, 48 hours of work in a week, that your productivity of doing the same work, your productivity drops exponentially each hour thereafter. So you may as well just stop at that point. It's not worth it. And then there's other folks but we still do these things out of quote unquote necessity. We have to work. We have to get this stuff done. We have to do all these different things. And so it goes back to your tier, right? Where you start thinking about the result is ultimately this will benefit everybody, project, the company, the whatever. Yet we continue to fight with ourselves as well as our work, because the we keep going back to, we have more work to do, we have to stay busy, we have to do things, we have to get stuff done, we have to check stuff off the list, rinse and repeat. And you mentioned the human being piece. We kind of, isn't it really easy just to forget that part?
Well, yeah, and it's been our history. It's been part of like the evolution of mankind, follows the same hierarchy of value. Like, the first, as human beings graced the planet, we were focused on survival. That's systemic. You either survive or you don't. Like, that's a one or a zero. That's what most systems are, right? Ones and zeros. Then we kind of conquered survival. We're pretty good at living past 27 years old or whatever it was. And so now we're into a success, extrinsic success. Now we don't measure our worth or how good we're doing by our survival. We measure it by success. Like, what are the things that we have, the things we've accomplished? And then what you're seeing now in the latest generations of I'll call them kids, that come into the workforce, is that's not even enough. They've had all of the stuff. They've had the world at their fingertips for their entire life. And so you're trying to motivate them with extrinsic stuff. And they're like, nah, let me just look up this thing and see how much it really is. And it's all right there, right at their fingertips. And so what they're looking for and what we're looking for as we grow in our societies and in our evolution is significance. And that's the intrinsic piece of it. You can't measure that. Intrinsic is immeasurable. But you can measure success, right? The number of tasks you've checked off, the amount of money you make, whatever. And so we're following the same hierarchy of value throughout our lives. And when we learn to tap into that, we start to see how companies, just like Google, for instance, right? They have this 20% time or whatever they call it, where you can work on your own stuff for however many hours a week. And they were successful in doing that. That's where a lot of the stuff that we use now that comes from Google came from. And you just get your own team together. You lead them and you say, hey, you interested in helping me with this? And there you have it. Google Mail is developed or whatever.
Talk about significance for a minute, because you, I was hopeful. You were like, you're explaining my kids. And then I was like, nah, I don't get it. So what's important to them? But you talk about significance. And so where I go in my mind, John, is like a lot of construction projects, we try to tie the purpose and the outcome of why we're doing what we're doing to this project is significant. You know, there's a new school going up in our neighborhood, and it's like doing it for the kids. And each day the people show up and it's like, I am so far removed from those kids. That significance is not really meaningful to me. If you're building a hospital, if you're working in whatever you are working in, you try to tie that ultimate outcome, but it's often really far away. So I don't think that's the significance you're talking about, but maybe that's our first attempt at trying to bridge that gap.
Significance is usually something greater than ourselves that touches us, touches our heart in some way, right? And so maybe the school isn't it for you because you haven't seen what that means. Maybe a hospital isn't it for some people because they've never been in one or they've never seen what can happen in there and the lives that can be saved, right? Or that experience, the human experience is part of significance. And so we want to understand what that's going to feel like. What's it going to feel like when that hospital gets built and now a relative of yours has to go there? What's that going to be like? That's right here instead of 40 miles away or wherever it happens to be, right? Those are the pieces that I think a lot of leaders fail to continue to keep in front of their project team or in front of their team. They forget to remind them of why we're doing this. I mean, when I was in IT consulting, it seemed like the only reason I was in IT consulting and we were looking to do this or do that was to make the owners of the company rich. Stay billable. You do this, you do that. We need to do this. For what? Like, what's the big deal? Oh, so we can get another contract with the Defense Department or wherever we have it. It's the city of Houston. And what? Nothing, right? But if you take it a step further, if you say, hey, we're helping to build ships that are going to take our sailors out around the world to protect people, you can make the story more intrinsic and more valuable. And that's really what it's about, is taking it. And some people don't see intrinsic value. That's not their strong suit. Remember, we can measure thinking. Some people are very good at systemic, but they understand that people are important. I have one of my favorite clients. His name's DJ. He worked He was a young engineer when I first met him, and really strong when we looked at his thinking in terms of being able to see systemic value. And he understood that people were needed to implement the systems that he was coming up with. And so he put a system in place to go value people. He made it a point to go say hi, to see how they were doing, to be present while that was, but it was all a system. He was very sincere when he implemented his system. And so this is so weird, but about every 6 to 8 months, he was getting promoted. So he got promoted in about two and a half years, where there was no other place to go unless like somebody died in the company. So he went to another company where he started out, and about 4 months in, they're like, hey, do you want to lead this team? Do you want to do? And it was, it's just amazing. You use whatever your strengths are, your thinking strengths, to create the energy, to take the action, to get to the results of the outcomes that you want. And that's what he did. He just used his best thinking to do that.
So is that a natural talent for him, or is that something you can learn?
So systemic is kind of they're thinking habits. So it's the way he was taught to think. And part of it, I think, is it's not nature or nurture. I think it's both. If you've ever read The Biology of Belief, Bruce Lipton talks about that, how DNA can't express itself without an environment. So you need both. So I think it's a little of both.
Okay, that's helpful, because, you know, you hear that all the time about, oh, that's just who they are. You know, that guy had a great personality, and because he's one in a million, he was able to do what you just described. And the rest of us, we see the world differently, and we act and behave differently. And so there is a bit. I don't disagree with you, and I'm glad to hear that. I think there's both nature and nurture in there. I mean, we do stuff with the strengths all the time. And so when you look at, you know, if it's at the bottom of your list, you're probably never going to get it to the top of your list, no matter how much you try. You could better it, but you're never going to completely flip it upside down.
See, and I don't agree. I think neuroscience tells us that we can change the way that we think, and we can change the way that we act and the way that we respond. So the last thing on this planet that I ever wanted to do was speak in front of people. I was an incredible introvert. I graduated from high school with three friends from high school. Two of them were my sisters. And the one was a neighbor. Like that, really, that was it. I mean, and I blame it all on my mom, because when I was growing up, she had me first, right? And then she had my baby sister 362 days later. So we're the same age for a while. Then a year and a half after that, she had my other sister. And then 2 years after that, she had my baby sister. And so she was 23 years old. The day after she turned 23, she had my baby sister. And so she had four girls at 23. And so whenever she would take us grocery shopping, right, we'd all be there hanging off the cart and stuff. She would tell us, listen, don't talk to strangers. And we listened. Like, our brain picked up that habit. It was a matter of life and death, right? You don't want to go off with a stranger or go up to the, you know, with a man saying he has a van full of puppies. You don't want to do that. We never did, right? We just never did. We just talked to each other and maybe our cousins and stuff like that. By the way, don't talk to strangers is still in my head. And here I am with you two. Great. Don't tell my mom.
I've got a van full of puppies in the garage.
You do. Right? You're that guy. You're that guy with a panel van full of puppies too. So throughout my career, I didn't want to talk to strangers. I don't know, my early 30s, I was director of an IT consulting company, and they merged a bunch of groups, and they had me lead this bunch of groups. I had like 100 direct reports at one time, which is, it's irresponsible of whoever put me in charge of 100 people. I mean, Jesus only had 12, and one of those went off the rails. So what was he expecting me to do? I don't know, right? So those are the things that I hated. I hated it. And when I understood, when I first took an assessment and it measured the way I thought, and it said I was good at valuing other people, and I was like, I don't even like people. Like, my work would be a lot easier if it weren't for people. However, what I do in neuroaxiology, that assessment changed my life. And so I started believing it. And I started my own company. And I didn't know how to get any business. I was on the delivery side and consulting. And so I went to a PMI meeting. I realized I had fired more PMPs than I did people who weren't certified, because we were in consulting and they just went in and put processes in, and we're all about processes and the not about the business that we were helping. So anyways, I went and I spoke there. Houston's what, the third largest PMI chapter or whatever. So I spoke in a couple places in front of 60 people, and all I kept focusing on was valuing them. I didn't focus on me because I thought I was a big loser. So, because I didn't have any friends. It all made sense in my head anyways, right? And it is amazing how easy it is to do the things in the human doing world that you want to do when you can just be who you want to be because you know how to think better. And that's why I have this message. That's why, you know, when Kyle saw me speak, where were we? Portland? Is that where mm-hmm. we were? Portland. All those years ago. It's still the same message. It just keeps being refined in terms of how to help people just manifest whatever their heart desires. Because it's really about that.
That it is. That's a great way to wrap up the conversation this morning. Lot to think about, lot to take away. Really enjoyed the time. Thank you for being here. This was cool. This was a great conversation. We'll have to do it again. Yeah.
Let's do that. Yeah. Did we go anywhere? I think we went somewhere there through all of that.
I don't know. I wrote a lot of stuff down. I don't know about you, John, but I wrote a lot of stuff down from this conversation. So I almost gotta hear it again when we're all said and done. I gotta listen to this one again. This was really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot that I'm processing. You know, I see the complexity that you're talking about, right? Because everyone comes in with the me focus. And so what you're actually saying is there's some learned ability to change it from a me to a you or a we. And how do you make sure you're valuing others? And I think it is a both and from an organizational standpoint. You could take care of the organization and take care of the people, but that takes a mindset. Sometimes a shift. It takes a certain mindset to get there. Oh, I love it.
To make it a little more real, if you'd like, your listeners can take a free assessment. That assessment that I mentioned, if you want, they can take that. They can go to myvqs.com/podcast, and they can. They can just take that. They can rank those two sets of 18 items, and they'll get a report back with three of their results in it. One of their cognitive strengths or assets, as we call them, and a couple of those thoughts that are going to get in their way.
Very cool. How do people get a hold of you, Tracy, if they want to find you?
LinkedIn's the easiest way. You can get all my information out there, or you can just go to tracyduez.com. This is the other way.
Perfect.
Awesome.
That's great. And I'll have that in the link in the description as well so people can find you. Thank you for the time. Same thing with Ripple Intent. You want to find John, you want to find me, you want to find Ripple Intent, go on LinkedIn. We're all over there. And of course, rippleintent.org with that. As always, we have to say thank you for listening. Thanks for being a part of what we do. And we will see you next time on the next podcast. Everybody take care.